Now, here we are, folks. Yes, I am Maurice Cerrone from A Handy Man's Haven, transmitting in the A Handy Man's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. I'm going to divert a little bit at the start of this show onto some of the things that Sean Hoffine just talked about with Brush Fires of Freedom. And one item is the amount of experiences or the environment that a young person grows up with throughout their life, and not ever realizing how diligent my own personal mom and dad were in various activities that they had us children associated with. And one of them was that even though we lived in Tucson, Arizona, since I was a very young youth, we had 2 acres of land, of which we had gardens on it. We raised chickens, turkeys, cows, goats, pigs, various things of that nature, as well as pigeons and so on and so forth. So we had our little farm and wildlife environment, so to speak, if you want to look at it that way, situated on the east side of Tucson, Arizona. But I remember one day we were back visiting my cousins in the Kansas area, and this happened to be in Kansas City at the time period, and my cousin says, let's go get some vegetables. And so with the 2 young children we had at that time period, we left the house and went down to a farm, and in the farm we end up walking through the cornfields, and we were picking corn right off of the stalks, and didn't think too much about it because I had seen it before in my life. Got back to the home where we're going to cook the meal and everything else, and the 2 children, the 2 oldest children, that's all I had at the time period, were just infatuated that we went down to a place that wasn't a store and ended up buying some corn. And the realization comes to the point whereby the introduction of various things in life and where it comes from is extremely significant and important in forming the values that young children have. One of the other incidents that I was associated with, which was, in my opinion, rather dramatic, but again, it has to do with growing up in that type of environment, was that as we were we were a complete crew that was leaving a hotel in Denver, Colorado, getting ready to go on our flight early in the morning. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning or so. And I don't know how the conversation developed, but it developed that where one of the female components of the crew did not have any idea or understand where milk comes from. And I thought that was very unusual, and so one of the other crew members had broached the subject with what was taking place and tried to pursue the avenues of where milk happened to be come from and what causes the creation of milk and wherever it comes from. And so the relationship was back to humans, what happens in a human being when there is a possibility of coming up with milk, and she had no idea at all what really created milk from that standpoint. So it was explained to her in details, and the explanation was very forthright in that upon giving birth, that the mother, if everything goes well, has the capability of providing milk through the lactation process to the young child if she so desires to utilize that mechanism. And I thought that taxi driver or the van driver is going to run off the road when we enter into that discussion because he had never heard of a discussion like that to take place. And these are our adults from that standpoint. So various activities along that nature becomes rather interesting in that, unfortunately, being raised on a farm or that type of environment or being associated with it gives a total different impression on where a lot of things that we utilize in our life are produced or come from. The other thing that Sean talked about was potato chips, and I remember in one of her excursions throughout life that cornflakes, people wonder where cornflakes may come from, how they're built, how they're derived, or are they just grown as cornflakes or what? Well, it turns out that if you have an opportunity to visit a cornflake factory, I was able to visit the Kellogg cereal company back in Michigan, and during the process, you'll learn that every kernel of corn produces one cornflake. And it starts down the line. They're all washed and cleaned up and everything else, and then pressed into the position that they are, and liquid is added to it, and then it's dried, and all of a sudden you have a box of cornflakes. And after you visit the cornflake factory and watch the assembly line, you have an opportunity of having a bowl of cornflakes. So I thought that was very interesting, complimentary on behalf of the Kellogg factory. So those are many things that, like Sean was talking about, that I had experiences with, and this becomes rather difficult when you do live in the type of environment we have today of exposing children to that type of growing up or environment where they can understand where a lot of things do come from. So in talking about A Handyman's Haven, situated at 1724 South 6th Avenue in Tucson, Arizona. Our phone number on location is 520-624-7200. We are open normally from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. And of course, we have the Labor Day weekend coming up, and so we are going to be closed on the Labor Day in Tucson, as well as our Green Valley location, and opening back up again on Tuesday of that week. Our Green Valley location is at 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 103 Alpha. The normal hours in Green Valley is from 8:30 in the morning to 4 o'clock or so in the afternoon. The hours of operation are from Monday through Friday. Visit us at our location. The phone number in Green Valley is 520-369-4858. So give us a call and a jingle on what you may have questions on concerning various activities. We are open here with an open line at 520-790-2040 with any questions or comments that you'd like to provide myself and our production engineer, John Couch, sitting on the other side of the glass, and you'd like to mention that to the listening audience that we have throughout this program. So, John, I'd like to have you take it away, and we'll see you after the break, folks. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice from A Handyman's Haven, and we're transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM frequency 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to enter into the conversation today, we'd really appreciate that. And a phone number on location for the live line would be 520-790-2040. So coming about some activities this next week, Thursday as an example, is the Reader's Choice Award on behalf of the Arizona Daily Star. And as I've mentioned in the past, we have been selected for participants in the favorites or the recognition, so to speak, of three categories. One of them is the best cabinets and countertops. The second category is hardware, and the third category is a home improvement design. So we'll see what our success rate is for the third year in a row with these Reader's Choice Awards on behalf of the Arizona Daily Star. As we've indicated in the past, we do sell countertops, and we sell marketed or merchandise, so to speak, all countertops except for stainless steel and tile-type countertops. Our expertise mainly is in laminate countertops, and we have any design of laminate countertops that's available. marketed by some of the more famous companies, such as Formica of years past, who had originally patented the laminate countertop, Wilson Art, and there's a couple, two or three other companies out there that we can also obtain the colors and the surfaces that they market. So the real advantage of buying a laminate countertop is its sustainability and its very affordable pricing. So for 9 feet of countertop, we can sell that to you for $81. 9 feet for $81. You can see that that is considerably less expensive than any natural stone or quartz countertops that are available. It has an integrated backsplash with that. We can get them without it if you so desire. All straight cuts at A Handyman's Haven are complimentary. If you have any complexity type cuts, such as miters, or need finished ends to finish out your countertop, there are a slight upcharge for that. But the main thing is that it is considerably less than any natural stone or quartz countertops are available. So 9 feet, folks, for $81, we can do that for you and get you set up quite regularly. As you know, we mention quite frequently the capability of A Handyman's Haven and what we can accomplish for you and the public in assisting in whatever activities you want, in a lot of woodworking techniques and things of that nature. We do modify cabinets extensively. We do are asked quite frequently, as an example, as to do we provide or make cabinets, manufacture, fabricate cabinets at our location? And the answer is basically no, but we do go through quite extensive modifications of the cabinetry in order to provide the customer with what their requests are. We'll take upon the challenge of any request, and with that being in mind, it keeps us quite busy as we work through a collaborative effort with our designers and our mill shop manager as to what needs to take place. I see we have a phone call, and Ingrid, welcome to the show. And what would your comments happen to be today?
You were talking about countertops. And usually a countertop goes on top of something. And usually what it's on top of, well, it can be a dishwasher, which does require electricity. But beyond that, we don't really hear about a lot of products. And I've been wondering for some time if there's anybody else out there who sees a need for the refrigeration of so many of the products that we keep in the bathroom, makeup, lotions, things that are fluid that can spoil. Many people get skin outbreaks and they don't know what's wrong. And I suspect that it's because the products that they're putting on their skin are spoiled. They're contaminated. Do you see anybody producing little refrigerators that you can put under the counter, or they might be a little too heavy to attach to the wall, and that's where I'm focusing for under the counter. Of course, you have to keep children away from these things, too. Sometimes people have things that children just shouldn't get into. And then there are medications. I keep mine in the refrigerator. And is this something that comes up in your industry at all? I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say. Thanks for a great program.
I appreciate that. And the comments are very interesting from that standpoint. I have the same situation in my house, that some of the medications that I use have to be refrigerated, and it happens to be away from the bedroom, and I have to go get it, and then I end up going into the bathroom area in order to accomplish what needs to take place. Bathrooms, unfortunately, and I don't know what the overall reason for it is, except it does take more space. Is very, very limited in almost every home that I've been in. There are certain homes that have been redesigned or add-ons haven't occurred, and the bathrooms have become larger where you can do a lot of different things in it. But that would be very appropriate for someone who does have various medications or cosmetic things or anything else that would require a constant cooling, that you can have a small under-the-counter refrigerator that are available today at various sizes that can be produced. Most of those sit on the floor. Can they be put on a wall? Well, yes, they can be, with various structural elements that are involved. But in existing homes that are already built, being that the floor space, I suspect, because of its cost factor involved, that, and it's been this way for years, by the way, it isn't nothing new, that you could increase the size of the bathroom, whereby you can put in there appropriate amenities. I do know today, as an example, that a lot of times there may be two water closet arrangements. There may be the bidet, as we know about, a French term for what's available, as well as the regular toilet, as we call it, or a water closet. But for some reason, it is not an open area. It's quite secluded, and I come across it many times, unfortunately, that where somebody is designing a brand new home or an architect has done that for them, and in a process they, and I'm going to call it a toilet as an example, sets in a little cubicle, and they've got a door on it which shuts it down, and they may or may not even have a supply airflow that comes into that room. And you can imagine what may occur from that standpoint, in that relationship. Not only does it take an excessive amount of room in the wall structure, but it's costly because they have to purchase a door to put on the open end of it. And it just seems to be very strange where openness is much more, in my opinion at least, a nice way to provide that. So with additional modifications of your existing bathroom, there is sufficient electrical power there because they do have a light system involved, or they may have an exhaust fan that you could put a refrigerator. I don't know how small refrigerators are from that standpoint today. The under-counter refrigerator would be something like 18, 20 inches deep, but you're going to have an area to put that in. So retrofitting is one avenue of doing it. If you're designing your own home, that surely would be another way of accomplishing that. But I do have a lot of empathy for just what you said, Ingrid, in that, you know, when you have to go to one area to get whatever you need out of a refrigerator, which may be in the kitchen area or the garage, depending upon where you're storing it all, and then remove it back to where you need it, and then take it back in order to preserve it from that standpoint. There is a lot of truth to chemicals or medicines that warm up that may deteriorate in time and could offer some results that may not be appropriate for what may take place for a good health reason. So good comment, good question. I really appreciate that very much. That opens up a line for anybody else who would like to call at 720-790-240 with various comments of that nature. As I've indicated, we are in a process of heavy modification of a lot of cabinets, and one of the current activities that we're working with is reducing cabinets to 17 inches of depth in order to accomplish various activities, mainly at time periods to put a microwave in a under-counter type arrangement where people would like to have it. A lot of pullouts are becoming one of the standard things that customers are asking for. Pullouts is where you open up the door of a base cabinet, and then you have a tray where you can pull that out to a three-quarters or a full extension glide system. And as I mentioned to people quite regularly, this eliminates getting on your hands and knees and not using a flashlight at nighttime to see what's in your cabinetry. And it's interesting, the comments that I receive, some of them I would rather not discuss, But people say, oh, I don't mind getting on my hands and knees. Oh, I says, really? I didn't realize that people really enjoyed getting on their hands and knees and scrubbing floors and looking in the bottom of cabinets. And they look at me like I'm some crazy nut that doesn't know what he's talking about from that standpoint. So we can set you up with items of that nature and continue on down the line. So some of the other things that are occurring, one of them is it happens to do with the bathrooms and developing things within a bathroom, of which we just talked with Ingrid's comments there, of storage of facilities. And we can, for you, develop a medicine cabinet, as an example, that may fit on the back of a door. Most bathrooms in the general nature have a door associated with it. Hopefully it's not a pocket door system like I have in my house. But if you have a swinging door, the door may open up against the wall, and you could have 5-6 inches behind that door that you could either hang a storage medicine cabinet, so to speak, or a storage cabinet that's 5 inches deep and give you a tremendous amount of storage on the back of a door. There are some other structural changes that I would consider that you think about at least. And one of them would be in a case like that, by hanging a heavy item on a door, that you probably should go with ball bearing hinges. That's so the door will open much easier and would not wear down the friction plane-bearing hinges that normally occur. The other fascinating part of that, if the door opens up towards a wall and you have 5 or 6 inches, you can actually open up the wall, which would be relatively easy to accomplish, and you can embed that entire storage unit within the wall structure and still gain that 5 inches that exposed into the bathroom. So the wall structure, if it's a 2x4 wall, as an example, that's at least 4 inches of space as you go back into the wall. And then you add the 5 inches that you may have available that the door swings into. That gives you a cabinet that's about 9 inches deep. And I can guarantee you that if you put a 5-foot or 6-foot cabinet in there, we can stack many cabinets in order to accomplish that, that you'd have tremendous storage available in almost every bathroom today that has a swinging door that goes up against a wall. I know bathrooms many times are constructed in different aspects of what the wall goes into, and one of them I know of is that the door itself to the bathroom may swing into a tub area, which that wouldn't be very desirable, but you could hang something on the back of the door that where it would work appropriately. Well, in discussing these items, it's rather exciting for me to do that. Again, if you have any questions, give us a call here at the studio at 520-790-2040. We are on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk, and it's time for our next break, so we'll see you after the interlude. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I'm Maurice, transmitting in the A. Handyman's Haven radio studio. We're on AM 1030, the frequency for The Voice with trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to give us a call here, again, it's 520-790-2040. We'll enter into the conversation of what you'd like to discuss. One of the things we're working on presently, due to a customer that came in this past week, is ADA, the American Disabilities Act. They need to modify two bathrooms in their home due to activities that they have with one of the patrons of the home. And what they're looking for is a ADA bathroom arrangement where a wheelchair can come on up to the sink area and accomplish all the things that the young person needs to accomplish with the sink. Obviously, there's several items to consider. One is the height of the cabinetry that will afford the opportunity of a wheelchair to come forth and come forward enough that where it's comfortable for the wheelchaired person to work and operate. And the other item is, where is the faucet going to be, the receptacle that provides the water, as well as the control mechanisms for the faucet? The standard 4-inch faucet or the single hole faucet that's available is not a very comfortable aspect in this type of situation. So in a process, and we've done this in the past on a couple occasions, that there is a faucet system out there that's called the 8-inch spread faucet system. The typical 4-inch spread or the single-hole faucet system would not be a good one for an ADA qualification. So with a 4-inch spread faucet or an 8-inch spread faucet system in that case, you have three independent holes that are required for that faucet system to work. They are independent because they're not tied together like the 4-inch system is. So you can put these holes in the top of a counter where it's extremely easy for the individual that needs to gain access for it. So as an example, many of us like to put our hands underneath the faucet as we wash our hands with soap and water. And to have the faucet, the dispersion mechanism in the back where they normally are, it would be very difficult from a reaching standpoint. Basically speaking, from our armpit out to the end of our wrist area is, for the normal adult at least, is about 24 inches. On children, it's much less than that. So the reach on a person that comes in underneath a or with a wheelchair doesn't have that reach that we as adults would even have. Many times adults are leaning forward as it is in order to get to the spigot. So the spigot could be put on the left or right side of the sink area. That would be very appropriate for whatever the individual would need and make it easy for that person. So now you got the controls. Well, the beautiful thing about an 8-inch faucet system is that they are three independent items. There is a hot water lever system, there is a cold water lever system, and then there's the spigot itself. So the controls, and we've done this on several occasions, we can put the controls on wherever they'd like to have them. And it may be on the right side or on the left side, so they can easily gain access to it and control the water accordingly. So we at A. Henny Men's Haven can do this for you. We could develop the arrangement of cabinetry that you'd like to have. We can adjust the height of the cabinets. That's so all the systems will work appropriate, and you can have a very fine system that's available that would comply rather with any American Disability Act type operation. We can also, underneath there where the wheelchair is going to come forward, we did this in one of the major cabinet designs that we did, or kitchen designs, I should say, that we did during the fall, or not the fall, but the spring portion of this year, is that we can cover up all the plumbing system and everything else, and there's a way of adapting the plumbing itself that where it doesn't intrude upon somebody coming in with a wheelchair, and that is changing the P-trap system out that where you can either put a bottle-type P-trap in there, which doesn't come down as far as a regular P-trap, or you could do a right-angle turn right underneath the sink drain, go to the back wall where all the plumbing is anyway, and then drop down in and pick up your drain system. We would put suggest you put a diagonal cover. You don't need to, but you can put a diagonal cover underneath where the sink arrangement is, and therefore the wheelchair can move in quite easily. And then all the information or all the plumbing is hidden and doesn't look so obtrusive from that standpoint. This is exactly what we did at one of the high schools in Tucson as we prepared the kitchen areas with wheelchair capability of moving into the sink and working it accordingly. So we can do this, folks. Just come on down and ask, and we can set up the system for you from that standpoint. One of the other things that we're working on at the present time is a customer came in with a side panel of a glass display that they had purchased many years ago, and the glass had been broken on one of the side panels, and they requested us to insert new glass as well as repair the system itself and stain match what's there that needs to be accomplished. And we can do it, folks. Keep that in mind from that standpoint. So design activities or design difficulties come up quite frequently, and with a collaborative effort with the customer, that's open to many and different types of ideas, as well as working with our designers at A Handyman's Haven, we can solve many problems that we have experiences with over the years, and develop for you the type of systems that you would like to have in your own personal home or things that you are doing from a construction standpoint. We do work with contractors quite closely on what they're accomplishing, and that's very, very important. One of the other situations that we've had this past week I'd like to share with you is that a couple came in and indicated to me that their contractor had sent them down to our store in order to develop the activities that they may need to solve the kitchen situations that they had. And as I discussed with them, it came upon to me that I had to ask the question as who is going to be responsible within the home for cooking in the kitchen and preparing the meals and other activities that are occurring. And it was finally indicated to me that the female portion of the pair was going to be the one that would be responsible for all that activity. So I, as we were continuing our discussion, I related back that all of a sudden I realized that all the conversation that had entailed up to that point was directed from the male component of the pair. And I thought, you know, something is strange here. Here is a contractor that is sort of dictating what's going to take place, and the male component is telling his partner that these are the things that are going to occur in the kitchen, and the one that is going to be working in the kitchen is basically having no say-so. So I'm rather blunt at many time periods, and I said, you know, folks, I'm going to be very upfront with you, and I think that this person right over here should be the one dictating what cabinets need to go where and what they're going to be functioning as from that standpoint. So this is the most important part in the designer's capability of working with the individual who is going to be the main responsibility for working in the kitchen. And it doesn't make any difference to either one of us at the A Handyman's Haven in that if it's the male portion that does all the cooking, of which I know many of them that do, or the female portion that does all the cooking, that's the one that is really responsible for assisting us in designing the kitchen to give them their dream kitchen that they would like to have. So keep that in mind, folks. If you come on down and want us to work on your kitchen, that's going to be one of the things that's going to come forward. And we love to work with those people who have specific needs within their kitchen that we can handle for them. Well, folks, we've just completed our third segment. We're on Frequency AM 1030, The Voice, with trusted local news and talk. And John is ready to flip all the switches there. So, John, take it away. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I'm Maurice, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven Radio Studio. On AM 1030, The Voice, with trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to enter the conversation today, please give us a call at 520-790-2040. I'm going to talk a little bit about barbecuing now. As you know, Sean on the previous show, Brush Fires of Freedom, is going to have his own barbecue transportation kitchen, and will be around the local area providing some of his fine meats. So this is not to be in contrary with anything that he says, but this is one of the trade magazines that I picked up on barbecuing, and it had some interesting points. Just to let you know, I did discuss this with Sean before he left, let him know I was going to talk about these various aspects. But one thing is rather interesting. We talk about barbecuing, and then we talk about grilling. And they are two different mechanisms. The terms grilling and barbecuing are very often confused and used interchangeably, but they are very different cooking methods. So, grilling. When the lid is up, you use high temperature direct heat on the bottom of the food instead of all around it. The lid refers to as many barbecues as we call them have it. They have a big lid on it that many times people leave it up or leave it open or whatever it may, or leave it closed, whatever it may happen to be. So by leaving it up, that means the high temperature is what's doing all the cooking. And this is the conduction heating method. The food is cooked by direct contact with the heat source, which could be the metal grates. It could be the high heat produces a, of course, high heat produces a little bit of smoke, and it brings meat up to its internal doneness temperature quickly. And by bringing meat up quickly, you tend to dry it out also. So contrary to that, there's barbecuing, which is the other term that's highly recognized. And this is a low and slow convection cooking with low temperatures, somewhere in the 200 or 300 degree level of temperature. Many barbecues may not even have a thermal thermometer on it or any type of controls of that nature. So the temperatures will bathe all surface of the food when you're between 203 degrees on a slow and low cooking type method. The food transferring heat directly for up to 2 to 18 hours. And many times you hear some of the barbecuing places in town say, well, it's been on for about 18 hours and it's been cooking all night long. And that's sort of the barbecuing type thing. So slow cooking over indirect heat will break down the connective tissues on tough cuts like a brisket. Smoke is also the essence of barbecuing. You can barbecue with smoke on most grills by creating a low heat zone within the barbecue system itself. You can buy a so-called barbecue equipment today that will have smoker systems on the side of it from that standpoint. White meats, as an example, when you cook them, they dry out because of less, I forget what it's called at the present time, but there are, let's see if I can find it rapidly here for white meats. When we talk about white meats, we're talking about using fowl as a lot of a cooking areas or cooking activities from that standpoint. It's made up of different type of muscle fibers, which are what they call fast twitch. We even use that term in humans, that we have fast twitch muscles and we have slow twitch muscles. And the dark meats are made up of the slow twitch activities from that standpoint, or slow twitch muscle. I'm having a hard time with these words. So slow twitch muscles, they produce slow and steady movement, where fast twitch muscles do what they say. It's fast and quick, jerky type movements and whatever you're doing. So they contain more fat for energy and the myoglobin, which turns the meat darker and makes it more flavorful when cooked. Fast twitch muscles are used for brief bursts of energy and contain less moisture and fat, making them dry out faster when they're being cooked. So keep that in mind when you're cooking breasts of fowl, or where you're cooking the dark meat, which comes in legs and thighs and things of that nature. That does become very important from that standpoint. So I'm going to start down the list now of what this trade magazine develops are the 10 facts of every grill meister should master in grilling or barbecuing. One is, the first one would be control your temperature. So depending upon what method you're going to use for cooking, whether it's a smoking or barbecuing or grilling, the temperature becomes very, very important. And it's a good idea to pursue a catalog of meats on what temperature is good for them to cook on. The other thing which is very important is never run out of gas if you happen to be using propane or any type of gas method that may be a natural gas, if you have that tied into your system. And I do know a lot of people who have bought propane systems and then have it converted over to natural gas. Natural gas during, or running out of gas during your cooking, also, if it happens to be a wood source, would be sort of disastrous in order to finish it. And unfortunately, you may have to take it off the grill, put it in a microwave to finish it up, and that, in turn, will also dry out your food more. Clean up your grill grates on a periodic basis, like maybe every time before you use them. A good way of doing that would get a nice steel brush and brush them clean. You can get those in any hardware store, generally speaking. Wire brushes we use to clean a lot of surfaces, and that will clean off your grill and get it ready to go. Take time to flavor your meat with the smoke, and that could be very, very important. You can use various wood chips as an example. You can soak them in water, which has a lot of moisture attached to it, and as those chips are burning over the coals, they're developing a tremendous amount of flavor associated with it. A lot of it would be mesquite chips, which is quite prevalent around southern Arizona here. The other thing is, I do know that you can get apple chips, you can get peach chips, you can get chips of almost any type of wood that's available. Most of those are marketed at the various grilling locations. And one grilling location that I like to go to is the Arizona Grill and Hearth, which is situated in the vicinity of Speedway and the street, the North South Street would be called Jerry. If you're familiar with Dunn and Edwards paint store on Speedway, immediately to the south of that Dunn and Edwards store is where Arizona Grill and Hearth is located. The street that they're on is called Jerry, and they'll have all those types of woods available that you can use. The other area with hamburgers, of which we do cook a tremendous amount of burgers on grills themselves, is dimple your hamburgers. And that's really very simple to do. Your hamburger is probably going to be pretty thick in that case. And you can take your thumb and sort of poke little holes in it throughout. And that in itself will cause your burger to be puffed up under the heat, which can cause uneven, which eliminates uneven cooking from that standpoint. So keep that in mind as far as dimpling your hamburgers. Another thing would be on chicken breasts, as an example, in order to grill a perfect chicken breast, as they say, you may want to find the center of uncooked, and even though the edges are nicely grilled or even charred, you'll find them uncooked if you do not take care of it properly. That's because the teardrop shape of a lot of chicken or fowl meat shape makes them difficult to cook evenly on a grill. So the solution is pound the breast flat with the bottom of a cast iron skillet, if you happen to have one, and then cover the meat with a plastic wrap before pounding it in order to prevent all the raw juices from splattering all over the kitchen surfaces from that standpoint. So pounding it flat makes it a little better for cooking it rather evenly from that standpoint. Too much moisture or dry food surfaces brown better, and that's why people are not a big fan of marinating. Moisture on the surface of the meat creates steam and prevents the browning. So if you are marinating, it's suggested that patting the food dry before placing it on the grill becomes very, very important, and you may even want to apply a coat of oil to help promote the browning. So my suggestion would be use some of the extra virgin olive oil in order to keep that in mind from that standpoint. You may want to do a little bit of reverse searing, especially on a charcoal chimney starter, whatever it may happen to be. And reverse searing would be if you get serious on the like a big steak cooked, of the experts indicates slow cooking the meat until it reaches internal temperature of 125 degrees. Fill the chimney starter halfway with charcoal and light. Wait for the coals to ash over and place a grill grate over the top using tongs. And you can do this on a regular grill doing the same type of method. Using the tongs becomes important in placing the meat that so you don't burn. So you can sear one side and then cook, turn it over in order to cook it slow. They also suggest using double tools. And I'll continue on that maybe next week, but double tools allows you to do the hot and the cold without causing any problem. Jeff Prather is coming up next with the Prather Point. He's got lots of good information for you. I appreciate being with you this weekend and hope you have a very fine week coming up. And folks, we'll see you next week on the Hammer Time Radio Show, AM 1030 The Voice.